Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hello, Jordana.
Hi, Paige.
So I'm curious about something.
Yes.
Yeah, recently you had this show here in Tokyo where you had your work, beautiful artwork, up on the wall. It was a group show, and I went with you and another friend to see it, and I'm sure you were there with a lot of other people as well, like seeing your work in real time, watching their reactions to seeing your work. And I'm curious what that was like for you, having that experience.
Yeah, it was really interesting because it's the first time I've done that since, like, I was living in the UK. Mm-hmm. So it was a mixture of feelings. So first of all, I was just kind of so, like, grateful that, you know, so many friends came to the gallery. So I was so happy. But then also, like, showing them the work. When you, like, I was, oh, yeah, this is mine. And, like, there's always that, it's that weird feeling of, one, I don't, if they don't really like it, I don't want them to feel like they have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, oh, maybe they won't know what to say. So I've got this internal dialogue going on in my mind. Like, they might not like it, so I don't want to force them to have to say anything. But then also, like, it's weird if I don't talk about my work with them. They've come here to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really was like, oh, yes, yeah, these are my three pieces. And I would just kind of, like, brush over it. And then, like, look, there's so many other cool work in here as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, like, give them the option to opt out of having to talk about it.
Right.
But maybe I was just giving myself the option to opt out of having to talk about it when I think back. I'm always worried about other people and them having to pretend whether they like something or not.
Right.
Yes. I mean, that's my underlying worry, I think, in those situations.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's vulnerable, really.
Like, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and awkward.
Awkward, yeah. Awkward is the best way to put it. I just felt incredibly awkward. I didn't feel proud or, like, the things that maybe I would have presumed I would have felt. It was, like, gratefulness for them being there and awkwardness for having to kind of talk about it.
Well, you know, so today's guest, Kate Sakura, is a musician who has been up on stage a whole bunch of times, like, sharing her music with an audience she can see. And part of what you and I talked about as we, you know, were discussing our conversation with her is this feeling of, like, how it feels to have to watch other people interact with your work in that.
Yeah. I can't even imagine as a musician, and this is, like, something I was so intrigued about when we were talking to her, is that the initial creative process of writing a song, or, you know, she was talking about, like, the lightning bolt of kind of inspiration, the tune and what have you, to the end product being standing on stage singing in front of all those people.
Mm-hmm.
They're just too, for me anyway, as someone who's not a musical person, feels like two extreme kind of situations, mm-hmm. like extremely opposite situations of being alone and writing and then being in a group of people and performing.
Right. Yeah.
I can't comprehend that process. It's really interesting to think about.
Yeah. Because really, especially at the initial stages of, like, when a creative idea is nascent, you know, when it's just a little baby,
yeah.
embryo, like, it is so private, and necessarily so, you know, if you expose a seedling to too much light or air or wind, it won't make it,
yeah.
You know, like, it needs a protective environment for quite a while, you know. But eventually that seedling gets bigger and stronger and bigger and stronger over time, and it gets used to a little more this and a little less that, and it can withstand more of the forces of the environment on it. I wonder if it's like that, you know, if it's the difference between a sapling and a mature oak tree, you know.
Yeah. Were you obviously you're a writer. Have you ever like had to read your work to other people in front of other people? So how it's a similar kind of process, I imagine. Like how did you feel about that process?
I think it is kind of as I was just describing, like you don't want to share at the very beginning, right? And I think that sort of intuition not to share is very valuable because it's just not ready, you know. When we share too early in a process, it can sometimes, you know, the idea doesn't make it because it wasn't ready to be shared. It can be shattering, actually, to receive feedback at a point where you're just not ready to do that. But for me, with writing, especially when it's gotten to the point where I am sharing in front of people in a public way, not just like other writers, say in a writing group or something, generally the piece has gotten to a point where it can withstand people's opinions, you know. Not that's not to say that, like, you know, sometimes people can still say hurtful things. It's not to say that sometimes you don't feel a little bit hurt by something. Of course, that can happen. But yeah, I think that by the time I have been sharing in a public way, generally I feel like the piece is ready for that, you know. But then there have been moments where I'm standing there and I'm thinking, and Kate describes moments like this too. Like I'm thinking, why did I agree to do this? Thinking, you know, because there's also that public speaking piece that comes in, which is I think universally recognized as a pretty scary thing to do, you know, to get up in front of people and do your thing is brave.
Like it's hard enough to perform something that you didn't write, but then to have to stand there and perform, so to speak, something you did write, it's like a double vulnerability, no?
I think that's true. Yeah. There's something in it where you're like, and it goes back to what we were talking about with your work too. Like you're sharing a part of yourself, you know? This is something that you made from a deep and meaningful part of who you are. It has significance to you, and you're sharing it, sometimes despite all the fears you may have had about sharing it. Did you feel any sense of trepidation before your show about the work?
I didn't really. But I think this is kind of a pattern for me. Like, I don't really think about that until I'm at that point. So I was very much like engrossed in making it and that process. It wasn't until I would start to tell people and people were saying, "Oh yeah, I'm going to come on this day." That's when it hits.
Real. Real now. It's not just an idea.
But at least I can put it on the wall, and I didn't have to be there. Like that was my choice. I could be there or not be there. Like if you're a musician, like you have to be there. You don't have a choice.
Well, I guess there's two parts, right? Because you're also, if you're a musician, maybe making an album that people can listen to without you, you know,
That's true.
in a room, in their car, wherever, right? But yeah, to perform on stage means people's eyes are on you, people's attention is on you, and there is this shared experience, right? Together, being attentive to the music and the words and all of that.
I know, like what now we're talking, I'm wondering if, like performing on stage is what lights up a musician as much as the initial creative process. Like,
And
even though they're kind of a night and day thing, writing on your own to performing on stage.
Well, and it's interesting too. Like, you know how when you have listened to an album in the privacy of your own space a million times and you every breath, every moment, every like nuance of every song, and then you go to a concert and they are doing it differently.
Yeah.
And you're
And
like,
just yeah, the energy that a live performance creates is magical. Like there is something so magical about music, isn't there?
I love how communal it can be during, there really is this feeling of like we're all here together.
And especially when you know the lyrics and
Yes,
certain songs and everyone's just singing along and it's just yeah, it's so powerful.
and back in the old days when we were younger, when
Oh,
people
yes, back in those days.
when people would like take out their lighters at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Like now it's people's phones, I guess, but like
I'm sure.
that feeling, of like just unity in this
Yes.
big group is so powerful, really.
Yeah. So I wonder if that, that performance is like the final kind of creative explosion for the musicians, hey. You don't know. It's like the pinnacle of that process.
Well, this conversation that we have with Kate is just so lovely, and she's a really fascinating person to listen to as she talks about her creative process and her experience, being on stage and writing before, well before that point of getting on stage. So, yeah, I'm excited to have everyone hear this conversation with Kate Sakura. Kate Sakura is a singer-songwriter from New Jersey, USA, who now lives in Tokyo, Japan. Kate's been writing lyrics and poetry since she could pick up a pen and started learning guitar at age 12 in order to turn her poetry into songs. Kate's emphasis has always been on lyrics, with the music taking shape around them. She's been compared to artists such as Liz Phair, Belle and Sebastian, Feist, and Suzanne Vega. Her biggest achievements to date have been playing Fuji Rock in 2009, touring with members of Deerhoof, writing and singing for commercials on the big screen, releasing several albums, and opening on stage for her idol, Liz Phair. Kate is a mom and a preschool teacher as well as a songwriter, and works hard to keep the passion for creating and performing alive in order to be an inspiration for her kids. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. So excited to talk to you.
I'm really excited too.
Yay.
Hey.
Yeah, I've been listening to your music and yeah, it takes me back to my, I want to say, like late teens, early 20s, I feel
Oh,
like.
awesome. That's a great compliment. That's
Totally the vibe. I love it so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, I can't wait to hear all about your inspiration or what have you. But our first question that we
Okay.
ask every guest is, what is your first memory of doing something creative, Kate? Can you tell us?
Oh, I love this question because I had a lot of memories flooding back. I'm not sure what the first one was, but I do have a memory of being at the beach with my family, or at the shore, as we say in New Jersey,
Yeah, we still call it
down the
the
shore,
shore.
and just playing in the sand. And oh no, I was in the water, and just suddenly I got this like bolt of inspiration, and I ran up to the tower where my mom was, and it's like, mom, give me a pen. I need to write this down. I need to write this down. I think I was about 8 or 9 years old. And she's like, okay, what is it? What is it? And I wrote my first poem, and I still remember it. I can recite it right now if you like.
Oh, yes, please. Yes.
It's really silly. Okay. The ocean is made of God's spit. On his back, with a lightning bolt, he got hit. And he muttered and sputtered and spit everywhere. And that's why I wonder, why do people swim in there?
That.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That is amazing.
So I'm not sure that was my first creative experience, but I probably wasn't, but that's the one I really remember.
Well, that would make an impression.
Yeah, that's a good.
And I've been writing ever since. So.
Oh, I love that story so much.
Thank you.
Well, and it does. It goes to, you know, it speaks to who you are creatively in so many ways, right? Like this, you the lyrical emphasis.
Yes, yes. I had to rhyme.
I have to ask. So you and I are both from New Jersey, and we're actually from the same part of New Jersey.
Yes.
Which is quite rare, actually. When you meet another person from New Jersey, very often you're like, I don't even know where that is.
Right. I know. It's a small state, but there's a lot of different areas. And they're very different.
So many people.
Yes.
But we're from the same part of New Jersey. So that's quite amazing, actually, to meet each other in Tokyo.
What a coincidence.
I know. So I get curious, which part of the shore did your family go to? Do you remember?
Oh, great question there too. Well, my grandmother used to live, my grandparents used to live down in Silver Ridge Lake, which is closest to Seaside Heights. But Seaside Heights was always like, I mean, as kids, we loved it because the boardwalk, and it was just, I don't know, just carnival, all of the stuff that kids love. But the beach itself was not the prettiest. Mm. So we would go to Island State Park. So that was where we went, probably where I wrote my first poem.
Right, that's what I was curious. I was trying to set the scene in my mind.
Yes, the salt, the smells, the seagulls.
I love it. So, yeah, I get so curious because, you know, I think we had a very specific vibe in New Jersey, in the like New York metro area in the 90s when you and I were growing up there.
Right. Yes.
You know, that probably influenced a lot of your musical development and your development as a person. So I'm curious to hear a bit more about your path towards where you are today as a musician, if you might let us in there a little bit.
Oh, sure. Well, my parents listened to a lot of music growing up. My dad listened to a lot of records. Rolling Stones was a big one for him. What else? Frank Zappa, kind of weird vibe, but awesome. And so I just remember hearing a lot of music growing up, and my parents having guests over, and it was kind of like this party vibe. And some of those friends would also bring me their music and make mixtapes for me. And so, yeah, I grew up around a lot of music. And then my brother plays bass guitar, my older brother. And so when he got to be in like middle school, high school age, his friends would come over and leave their instruments in the basement. And then I would just go down there and play when they were gone. So, yeah, I think I spent a lot of time, you know, this is like pre-internet age, really. So I had a lot of time to think and reflect and write music and be bored. I, you know, my friends and I would play out on the street and play kickball and stuff like that when I was a kid. So it was a very, I guess, wholesome time growing up there, and until high school anyway. And then that was the time of like grunge, like Pearl Jam was coming out, and yeah, Liz Phair, like, you know, all of these bands that were kind of that 90s alternative vibe. I definitely got a lot of inspiration. Just, yeah, I would say my home life was very happy and positive, and this music was edgy and cool, and I was like, I want to be edgy and cool too. So I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah, that's kind of how I experienced it, and it was a very beautiful little town to grow up in. So
Right. Yeah, the area where you, so I went to elementary school in the town next to the town where you grew up. I didn't live in that area though. I lived slightly farther west. But that, it's just so, so beautiful with the lakes and the greenery and the everything. It's really beautiful there. Yeah. Yeah. So I imagine that it was a lovely childhood getting to, you know. Yeah. And I was obsessed with Liz Phair myself.
Awesome.
I would play, because I think I did have her CD. It was like at the time where we were just making the transfer from cassette
to CD.
And I worked in a dry cleaner and I was like the only one there most of the time. So like they would do the actual cleaning on a different site, and I was the only one there taking the clothes when people would bring them in or giving them back when they came in to pick them up. And I would have Liz Phair playing on repeat on the little, like, you know,
That's so cool.
And some customers appreciated it more than others.
Yeah.
There's certain lyrics that Liz Phair brings.
Right. I'm thinking of a few right now. I always would turn those songs down a little bit, like when my parents were coming by. I'm like, okay, maybe my dad wouldn't have mind, but my mom would be like, what is this? What are you listening to? Yeah.
A little risque.
Yeah. I had her album Whip Smart on cassette tape, and my first vehicle was a pickup truck, and it had a cassette deck. Just listen to her album over and over again. And I'm fast forwarding to when I got to meet her, I brought that with me and had her sign it for me.
Oh.
So yeah, I was like, oh my God, have you seen one of these in a long time? cassette tape. She's like, you know, if times ever get hard, you can sell it, you know. I would never, never do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, so your music has been compared to hers and you've been on stage with her. I'd love to hear more about that.
Awesome. Yeah. So at that point, I'd been in Japan for a couple of years, and I had just gone back to the States, and I was engaged. My husband's Japanese. And yeah, I was just trying to work on music stuff and plan a wedding, and that was my life at the time. And I heard that she was coming to play at Maxwell's, which is in Hoboken, and it's a venue I've played before. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I have to play. So I had kind of an insider tip that she was going to play. Mm-hmm. And then I just sent my demo and just an introduction, like, I know this guy who works here and I would love to open for Liz Phair. I need to open for Liz Phair. And yeah, so at the time though, my band was in Japan. So they were like, the only request from Liz is that you can rock. I was like, okay. I'm going to rock. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to rock. So I got my brothers together, my older brother on bass, my younger brother on the keys, and another friend of ours on the drums. And we rocked. So, and yeah, so the venue doesn't really have a band, like a room to hang out, a green room, or I don't know what they call it. Mm-hmm. So the only place to go to get away from the crowd was the basement of the bar, which is like a basement of a restaurant. It's not very nice. So she was down there just kind of waiting for her taxi to come and take her away. And I saw her and was like, oh, let's take a picture. And she was just so kind. Yeah. And I forgot to mention, like, when I walked into the venue during her sound check, she stopped playing and she came down off the stage and came over and gave me a hug. Wow. And I was like, what is happening? Best day of my life.
Yeah.
Just super nice. Yeah.
How did it feel when you were like on stage playing? Did you have, you know how sometimes you have those like lucid moments of like, oh my God, I'm living the dream right now?
Yeah.
Like, did you have a moment like that? Or was it more just like, I'm doing my thing?
You know, a lot of times when I'm on stage, I definitely get in my own head and I sometimes forget where I am or I start daydreaming. I don't actually remember what I was thinking at the time, but the room was full of not just Liz's fans, but all of my friends who were just really excited. So I think I was just riding that high and just being really excited and probably playing my songs a lot faster than I normally do. But yeah, it was definitely an adrenaline rush for sure.
I can imagine.
And like, so pulling that you got your brothers to play with you, was that like an easy thing for them to just kind of come in and help you on that night?
I think so. We don't normally practice together. Like, we're all very much playing our instruments alone or with other bands. But I think, you know, being a family, there's like a similar vibe somehow. I mean, my older brother is playing bass guitar and he prefers more like heavier music, like hard rock. And then my younger brother is classically trained. And he just has this very, he can play really elegantly and beautifully. But he also has this really weird perspective. So he writes a lot of weird stuff. But yeah, I think they really came together. I sometimes have to rein them in because they get awfully goofy and start joking around. And I'm like, come on, guys, we got a show to do.
Yeah.
but that's kind of similar to our family dynamic. So yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, great to got to share it with them as well. Hey.
Yeah, it was really amazing.
Mm. So obviously you've played in America and in Japan. So what can you tell us a bit about some experiences that have really stuck with you from playing live music, both in Japan and in the US?
Sure. I came to Japan in 2005. And at that point, I'd been playing live houses and bars in New York City a lot. And yeah, I was used to playing these really loud places where, you know, people were there to see music, but they were mostly there just to drink and hang out with their friends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're in front of this room of people and they're not really paying attention to you. Which I think was a good way to like build up a stage presence and get used to that. But so when I came to Japan, it was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
It was like you could drop a pin and hear it. It was actually really unnerving at first. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the silence meant that they didn't like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very self-conscious and was like, oh my God, I have everyone's attention. What am I doing? And then when I came off the stage, I just had people coming up saying they love the show and wanting to buy my music. So it was like, oh, okay. So that was kind of my first realization, just how different it was. But yeah, I got really used to that. And then going back to play those noisy bars in New Jersey, New York, I was like, ugh, this is horrible. Nobody's listening to me.
It's such a contrast, isn't it,
yeah,
between the two?
Yeah.
Where are your manners, people?
I know. Come on now. It became a little bit of like a sound snob as well, because if you play at a live house in Japan, they just, you know, it's,
yeah,
the quality is so much better.
Yeah.
So, but you also pay a lot more to get in the door. Your fans have to pay, you know, I'm asking my friends to come and drop $30 just to hear me play. It's like, that's one thing I really don't like about the system here in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there must be a lot of differences like that, really. Like, I feel like in the States, you know, very often it almost feels like hanging out, right?
Yeah.
At times at a lot of venues, like you're not, it's not that serious, you know, like it's like we're just hanging out, we're having a good time, like we may be paying attention, we may not, we may be like, you know, having a deep conversation of our own in the booth in the back or whatever, right? But like here, it really is, it's a destination, you know, it's a thing that you're doing on purpose, you know, you're going and listening to music, right?
Yeah. And here too, it's the whole setting up the show, inviting other bands, then promoting the show. And that kind of side of it is the side I don't really like.
Mm-hmm.
So but I think that's kind of what you need to do in order to be successful. Wherever you play music, you have to promote yourself and you have to do it all, especially nowadays with everything being on the internet. So yeah, that's one thing I still struggle with a lot. And even more so now that I have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I'm sure. So yeah, like how has your transition into motherhood, because you know, this is the interesting thing. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately, like the way we do motherhood here in Japan, the sort of standards and expectations and norms are fairly different than the standards and expectations and norms in the US, at least that I grew up with. And probably, I wonder if you did too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so it's, you know, hard in many ways to balance work and life and creativity with the way that motherhood works here in many ways. Has that been your experience at all?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. That is it. And I almost feel like I'm fighting to keep some form of myself, my creativity, I feel like I have to fight, and yeah. it's hard. And then I've recently been trying to see it more like I'm being creative. I'm just being creative in different ways that I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just the time, the schedule, it becomes all about the children.
Yes.
And yeah, it's very hard to carve out some time to just to sit down and watch something on TV. Mm-hmm. So let alone like be creative and write a song and then produce that song and perform that song. It's mm-hmm. it's definitely my music has taken a hit. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, what I hope is that, you know, I tend to process things much later. Mm-hmm. I write about things that happened 5 or 10 years ago, instead of writing what just happened yesterday. So I feel like I'll be writing a lot of songs about raising children in about 5 to 10 years.
It takes a while to even process what's happening with motherhood too, I think, you know.
It does. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's almost like being hit by a truck or something. Wait, what happens? You know? Where am I?
Yeah. And then, you know, with COVID, that just was a whole other element that just really messed things up for a while. Mm-hmm. With my older daughter, I would just bring her to all of my live shows and my sound checks. I think yeah. I have photos of her strapped on my back while I'm checking my guitar.
Oh.
Or like being in the studio, like holding her.
Yeah.
And then my little one was born in 2020, and she hasn't really gotten to experience that. So I'm just starting to get out there again and play more shows. So it'll be interesting to see how they grow up and how they think of me, mm-hmm. Musically as well.
Mm. Is music a big part of your everyday life in your home with your daughters?
I think so. I try to actually listen to more music, but we tend to have the TV on. Uh-huh. But when I'm cooking, I'll put something on, and we'll have little impromptu dance parties. So yeah, I think they get a lot of exposure to music through just like I did when I was a kid, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you sing with them and stuff like that?
Oh yes. Yeah. I often find the best time to sing is when I'm riding around on my bicycle.
Yes.
So I'll have them on the back and I'll just be singing away, and you know, people probably think I'm crazy.
No, I love that. I have seen that. I've seen mothers, you know, singing with their children on the back of the bike, and
yeah.
smile like from ear to ear every time. I love it so much.
Yeah.
How about if you sing on your bike and you don't have your kids there? Because I do it all the time.
I do that too. Sometimes we're both singing on the bike, but we're singing completely different things. Yeah, and this is both of my kids. My little one, she's like really into dinosaurs now. So she was singing T-Rex. Her own original song.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
In my family, we love to make up songs about the pets and like using the voices of the pets, you know, to like express themselves.
I love that. Do you have an example?
No. No. Just me for an hour with me singing in the voice of our pet rabbit, Clover.
Oh, yes. We have a pet with the same name. That's right.
We have a turtle.
Yeah, a turtle named Clover.
Oh, my goodness.
Another coincidence.
I was going to ask you too about like riding. So our childhood in New Jersey was very car centric. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes. You know, it would have really blown my mind as a small child to imagine an adulthood where like I didn't drive, you know, because I had a bike and I walked everywhere, you know, like,
yeah.
I wonder how that is for you. Like there's no cassette deck.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I often watch these things on social media, like other podcasts about motherhood or just things on Instagram. And there's always like a mom singing in the car or dropping her kids off at school with the kids in the back of the car. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have that experience at all. Like it's very different. And I mean, sometimes I feel a little bit like I wish I could just pop some music in. Maybe I should just get like a big boom box for the front of my bike. if I want to stand out a little more, but
even more, yes.
Yes, even more. But yeah, I think it's really cool though that I don't need a car in my day-to-day life here.
It's part of why I chose it, actually.
Yeah.
Never owned a car. Can you believe that? I've never
owned
a car. And that's on purpose. Like growing up in Jersey, seeing how like you couldn't live. You couldn't survive without one. And I was like, yeah, no. I don't want to be reliant on a car, you know, to live my life. And so basically every life choice I've made has been around not needing a car.
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't consciously do that, but now that I don't have one and I see how amazing it is, whenever I go back to New Jersey and I have to rent a car or borrow someone's car, it's true. It's like you can't really go anywhere.
You can't do a single thing. You can't do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I used to walk to school and it was on the other side of town. Mm-hmm. And we would have these, I think of it like the Goonies. We would have these adventures. Yes. We would go into the car dealership and steal candy from the vending machines. So, yeah. I don't know if I can get in trouble for that now, but
naughty.
So naughty. So yeah, it was a little bit of like Stand By Me meets the Goonies. But other than that, you couldn't really go anywhere without a car and your parents had to drive you everywhere.
Right. So, yeah. So my elementary school was in Mountain Lakes and we would drive from, you know, west of there all the way to Mountain Lakes. And it was this constant traffic situation every single day, an hour in traffic to get to school in the morning and an hour to get home in the evening. And my whole childhood, I was like, this blows. Although the best part of the car ride was the music, always.
Yes.
My parents listened to 101.1 CBS FM.
Oh, yes. CBS FM.
Exactly. That's it. I don't think it still exists now.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's gone, but we listened to that. And like the music was the redeeming factor. Mm-hmm. Long, 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 long traffic glutted car rides.
That's true. That's what keeps you sane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wanted to ask you a bit about your creative process. You said before that you usually write about things, you know, 5-10 years after they've happened. When you're writing a song, like, do you have any rituals or process? Like, what inspires you or motivates you when you're writing something?
Well, I rarely ever actually sit down and say, I'm going to write a song. It's kind of like that first bolt of inspiration. You know, it's usually when I'm doing things, going about my daily life, when I'll get an idea, a phrase or just a melody, and I'll either just text it into my phone. I'll put it in the notes, or I'll just sing or hum a few bars of whatever it is that popped into my head. And the hope is that I'll come back to it later and kind of turn it into an actual song when I have some privacy. Usually I can't really, I have a hard time collaborating with a song like when it's super new. Mm-hmm. Like just saying, okay, hey band, let's get together and just like write a song. It's so hard for me to do that. And I was always in my bedroom with the door closed, like strumming and figuring things out on my guitar. So I think my process hasn't changed in that regard. Although I have a lot less time now. So I have to be more intentional about things now. So, I'll be in the supermarket, like covertly, holding my jacket up over my face while I like sing into my phone. I've been doing stuff like that. So, and then later, usually on my commute to work, I'll listen back. And if I really like it, I'll get excited and I'll just keep listening until more ideas come. Mm. And that's basically how it comes out.
It's wonderful because I'm not a musical person at all. So I can't comprehend how like that happens from like the initial lightning bolt of inspiration to the final piece. I'm just like, it's like magic or something for me. So it's interesting to hear.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of like magic, and it can also be frustrating when that magic doesn't come. And I've had long dry spells where I'm like, okay, this is, come on, just write something, this writer's block. But I do try. One thing that I've been doing is every year in February, there's something called February Album Writing Month, in FAWM for short. It's FAWM. And it's a platform where you have to, the goal is to write 14 songs in the month of February.
Wow.
And and every week they give you some cues. It's a little bit like the Inktober, where they give you like a topic and you write about it or you draw about it. But it's for songs, and it's a really nice platform because you get connected to other musicians who are doing the same thing, and you can give some feedback and they can give you feedback, and everybody's really nice. So no one's going to say like, this song really sucks, you know, but people will often just have nice things to say about it. And yeah, that's, it's good because it makes me have to take accountability. Cause you know, otherwise I'd probably just wait and wait and wait for inspiration to hit, which is really frustrating. So it's hard to do, but once you get going, then more ideas come if you keep exercising that muscle. So that's one thing I do.
I love that. Yeah. Sometimes what we need is a container, right? Like a space where we can pour into, you know, like a situation where we know it's okay to just make it messy. It's okay for it to be blah. It's okay. And, you know, it's going to be accepted. And we know, okay, in this month, I'm going to be doing this. And it doesn't matter whether it's good or not. I'm just doing it. That kind of thing.
That's so true.
Yeah. What are some other things that you might do when you're finding yourself like in that place where you're outside of your flow, like it's just not happening the way you want?
I often listen to other music or go see a show. And especially when I see live music, I tend to get just really inspired. It's like, that's what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
So, and then it's like, it just opens the gates. So yeah, just exposure to other music for sure.
Yeah, it can really light you up that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So these days, are there any projects that you're working on that are lighting you up or getting you excited?
Well, it's kind of coming out of COVID times. I've started playing a few little shows here and there, and just trying to get back to a regular rehearsal schedule with my band. We were just practicing last night, and we played a song that I don't think we've played in 5 years. And after we played, it was like, oh, I think we just got 5 years younger.
Oh, wow.
it was like, wow, it's still there. Oh my God. And all of these memories that were associated with that song came back to me. And it was, yeah. So that was kind of exhilarating. But I also, it's been a while since I've put out any new music. So I definitely would like to consciously make some time in my day, even if I don't write a song, just to like have a block of time to write or draw or listen to music even. But I will say that I've been singing with the Northwest Wailers, which is a group of women friends. Some of us have kids, some of us don't, and we just go to the park and we sing, and we've done a couple performances, festivals. We did a benefit, and yeah, it's really cool to just take a break from my own stuff and just sing with other women. So yeah, I would say that's what's lighting me up these days.
I love that. Yeah, we, you know, that Jordana and I also, we interviewed Annie, who is our mutual friend with you as well, who, although we've never met you in person, we all know Annie.
Yes. Yes, she's famous.
When we interviewed her in season 2 of the podcast, it was about this singing group that she does, which she's also part of the Northwest Wailers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we found, you know, Jordana and I have both found how incredibly therapeutic and bonding it is to sing in community like that, and to have that space you can just, be raising your voice together with other women in. It's so powerful.
Yeah, I love it. And normally I'm so busy with my preschool teaching life and my mom life. And yeah, it's really hard to make time for these kinds of things. And, but we do it. She sends, you know, she'll send out the files and I'll like sing along and my kids start learning the songs and we sing it together. And then, you know, I come to practice and it's like, yeah, I've been here. I'm doing my part. But yeah, when all the voices come together, it's just, yeah, it's amazing. There's no other feeling like it.
Really? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. There really isn't. And, you know, I think we spoke about this with Annie. I can't remember for sure, but like that feeling of voices raising together, like it used to just be part of everyday life for humans, you know, singing together. And we just have so much less of that now, I think, than we used to. And so to bring it back, like to, it just connects us with something deeply human, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, so many people think that, oh, I can't sing. Nobody wants to hear me sing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a big philosophy, the part of the philosophy of Music Together, for example, is that, you know, everyone can be musical.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter what your technical abilities are. If you enjoy singing, then just do it. Yes. You know, if you like dancing, just dance. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's really, I think it's part of being a human being to be able to do those things. So,
yeah, it just feels so good. Mm-hmm. Because it is tapping into that part of being human, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
But there is sometimes that fear though, isn't there? The initial fear to do the dancing or the singing. Like for me, it was even just going to Mother Song, it was a bit nerve-wracking at first. Mm-hmm. To sing in front of other people, even though in my house, like, you know, we're belting out songs, to sing in front of other people you don't know, it can be quite a jump for a lot of people, I think. Hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I worked with one of my dear friends. She's a kindergarten teacher, and she's like, Kate, I just don't sing. Like, I do not sing. And I told her, yes, you do. You sing. Don't worry. You sing. And she's like, I don't. And you know, she really gave it a shot. And I could see the kids respond so well to it. And as the year progressed, you know, she was singing more and more with them. And it's really hard to get over that hurdle, especially when you tell yourself, I can't do something. And, you know, that's true for anything. Like, I always have a moment of stage fright. Like right before I get on the stage, I'm like, whoo, why am I doing this? And then, but once you like rip off that Band-Aid, it's the best feeling. And then especially afterwards, I'm like, oh, I want to keep doing that more and more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's initially though. Yeah, it's the fear is real.
It's real. And it's so normal, you know, for us to feel that, especially when we are, doing something in front of other people, right? For any reason. Like if I'm writing, for example, like I don't need to show it to anybody. I'm not at Carnegie Hall here. You know, I pull it up and throw it in the garbage. Nobody knows, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Once you're on stage or once you're in a group of people, there is that feeling of like, you know, oh, what's everybody going to think? Or what was I thinking putting myself in this position? Mm-hmm. And it feels so good to do it anyway.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. I'm just, because whilst I'm listening to you, Kate, I'm always like thinking about also my creative process as a artist. And like as a musician, it's like, I'm just imagining if you're writing for so long or making the music, but then actually playing in front of people, to me, it feels like two completely different things. But like how does it feel for you like to go from being by yourself making that song to then the end product being you with your band in front of lots of people?
I don't know if I've really thought of that before, but it always starts out just me with a piece of paper and a pen and my guitar or my phone singing into it. And then I feel sometimes I can't share it with anyone else until I think it's complete. So even my band, I'm like, okay, sometimes I'll play like a piece of a song that I'm working on, and then they'll just start jamming on top of that, and you know, then it becomes something different than I expected, which usually is great because I think they're amazing musicians. But oftentimes I won't really show people until I feel like it's mostly there. And then they add their side to it and make it better. And then, or I'll record it. And then the producer that I work with, will give me some suggestions. So yeah, I guess it is just being open to other people coming in and maybe changing things or adding things to it. I've always been really open to that. But yeah, the process of making and the process of recording, performing is quite different. Yeah. Once I'm on stage, it's like the song is complete and then it's just playing with it, just having fun with it at that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if I've ever like played a song that I wasn't sure, like that I liked it. Like I will, if I don't like the song, I'm not going to play it. So yeah, I don't know. Like I don't worry too much about what the audience thinks about the song itself, because I think most of the time they're just having fun being there.
Yeah.
And they've chosen to come see you. So.
Yes. And they're usually like somebody that I know or a friend, because I'm not like big time famous or anything. I've had a few funny things happen where like I've looked out and seen people singing my song in the audience and being like, what? Which is like extra pressure for me, because then I have to remember the lyrics.
Right. We know. We'll know.
Like, oh no, they caught me. I did. There was a woman many, many years ago who like covered one of my songs and put it on YouTube. And I was like, what? Wow. This is so cool. So cool.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And you know, it must be really interesting to see your work be interpreted in a different way by someone else.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, well, thank you so much for making time to be with us today, Kate. We really appreciate it.
This is so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Loved hearing your process and every I wanted so many more questions I could ask you, because I'm so curious. I love music and I can't do it. So I'm like, how does it work?
I feel that way about a lot of art things as well. I mean, I do dabble a bit in art, but I usually have somebody else make my artwork for my album, and my kids are really artsy. So yeah, I think it's really cool seeing somebody do something that they love.
Yeah,
it really is. Very inspiring.
Yeah, it really, really is. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you, if people want to hear your music or find out more about you, where can they find you online?
Well, I have my albums are up on bandcamp.com under Kate Sikora. You can find me there, or on Instagram at K8. Sikora, so K8 Sikora. And I've got a Facebook page as well, where sometimes I update things on there. I'm not the best with the social media. But yeah, and you know, playing shows a couple times, maybe like every other month, I play a show here and there around Tokyo.
Oh, so if so, all the information about where you're playing,
yes,
that would be on your Facebook or Instagram, or
yep, Facebook, Instagram.
Okay.
That's where I put it.
Oh, great. Well, I'm gonna go have a look at that then. Hey,
well,
Paige,
thank you.
We should make a date, Paige.
I know. Let's go together.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Thank you so much, Paige, and thank you, Jordana. It was so lovely speaking with you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, now it's time for our Ask Us Anything section. This is where we answer questions that listeners have submitted to us. So Paige, can you tell us what's today's question?
Yes, this is an anonymous question. And it's quite short and to the point. How do other artists inspire your process?
Oh.
So yeah, for you, Jordana, with your visual work, I know recently you were in the UK over the summer and you had sent me some photos and little videos of an exhibition you went to there. Did you find that inspiring to go and look at other artists?
Yes, I'm always inspired by other artists, be it exhibitions or like on Instagram, people I follow on Instagram. And when I went to that exhibition, I was really inspired by the use of symmetry in the artist's work.
What was the name of the artist?
Her name was Hilma Klint, and her work, she had a big exhibition on at the Tate, Tate Modern, over the summer. And already, like, the colours that she uses are colours that I am drawn to and would naturally use, I think. But I really loved the way that her work, so it's very bold, but when you get closer, you can see the details. And for me, that's something I always struggle with. I always feel like sometimes I get bogged down with the detail of my work, and there's an element of frustration. And I always feel like, is this how it's supposed to be? I don't know. I'm always like thinking about my work and the way I work. And I'm trying to like loosen up a bit. And I think seeing her work made me realize, like, I can have both elements. I can have like the bolder, freer colors and shapes, but I can also, you know, use the details that I like to put in a kind of smaller way, not necessarily for the whole image. So, you know, I think for me, seeing other people's work makes me think about my own process in a way that gives me something, it makes me realize it's okay to do whatever you want to do. You can incorporate all those bits. You don't have to separate them out or, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Maybe like so many of us have sort of self-imposed limits that we're not even really aware of. And when we see someone else just like not having those limits, whatever they are, you know,
exactly. You're like, oh, I, you know, that is an option. Why did I? Sometimes, you know, simple things you don't realize until you see somebody else doing it. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, what? That's so simple. Why didn't I just think of that myself? Sometimes you need that, you know, that inspiration or that, you know, little push from somebody else in order for you to get to that point.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you think, you know, because what I notice in myself is that very often, like someone's perspective might be actually quite similar to mine, but just different enough that like there are these interesting glimmers of new ideas that I find that really exciting. Is that something that excites you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting because when you feel like you're connected or you have a similarity to someone else or you're coming from the same point of view or what have you, and you see those elements, it's just encouraging, isn't it? Encouraging. It makes you feel, okay, I am on the right path. Well, you know, what I'm doing is right for me. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Right. How about you, Paige? How about like with your writing, what have you? How are you inspired by other people?
Well, I read very voraciously.
You do, don't you? Yes. I'm always like, how many books?
I read dozens and dozens and dozens of books a year. And I only know that because I never used to keep track, but in recent years I started using Goodreads to keep track of what I'm reading, because someone else I knew was doing it. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I wonder, you know, like it might as well just keep track of what I'm reading. And it's quite interesting actually to look back and see like what I was reading in 2021 or 2020, you know? So anyway, once I started tracking the books I was reading, I was like, wow, okay, I do read a fair amount. But anyway, the input of reading for me, reading is so very natural. It's almost like breathing. I just do it. And I love doing it so much that I'm not super aware of how it's influencing me, if that makes sense.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It's kind of like subconsciously going into you.
Yes. But I'm noticing. So, for example, right now I'm reading a book called The Overstory by Richard Powers, I believe his name is. I might be getting his last name wrong. It might be Power. And this is a book, it's a very long book, it is incredibly kind of interwoven stories that all come to a certain point using the symbolism basically between the relationship between trees and their ecosystem to kind of mirror, to compare and contrast essentially the relationship of humans with our ecosystem, you know?
Oh, wow. That sounds very interesting.
It's a fiction book that is very, it is interesting. Mm. It's also heart-wrenching. It's like
really
emotionally difficult book, but this, as I'm reading this book, I'm noticing, you know, certain parts of my consciousness going to a place of like, oh, that's interesting how he did that, you know. Oh, and there are times when I think like that, when I'm reading like a writer, you know, more consciously. Mm. So often I'm reading just because it's what I do and I'm not analytical about it necessarily. But when I do go to that place of noticing, some of the things I pay attention to are, yeah, how someone works structurally, you know, what they're doing structurally to make something happen in the book.
Mm.
Or more often than that, what I'm very interested in is sort of the poetics of the language.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, how they made an image resonate or how the language works in a specific sentence. That is very interesting to me. And there are times when I will, and you know, to be fair to myself, like I'm saying, like I'm not very conscious. I don't think that's true. There are many times when I stop and I look at a sentence and I think, okay, how did this work? You know, what was happening here? Like, why did I feel what I just felt? That yeah. I do that. But most of the time for me, reading is incredibly relaxing and I enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, like listening to you talk about that experience, it make, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how, you know, obviously you read so many books and I'm always looking at, you know, different images and what have you, how some images you can just kind of go past and you're like, oh, that's nice, but then other things will make you stop in your tracks and be like, oh wow,
yes,
like how, why, yes, what is this thing, and you just want to dig deeper and find out more and more about like that artist or that author or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's important to listen to those things when they come up for you, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it really is. And those are the places I think where we are looking to grow ourselves, whether we realize it consciously or not, you know.
Yeah.
We're interested in pushing our own boundaries at that point. And that's really something we can only tell ourselves, you know.
Mm.
If someone were to come and say to you, now, Jordana, you should be looking at this. You should be trying that. Like, that is a much less compelling way to learn.
Yes, yes, yes.
As opposed to, like, following our own interests and those glimmers of insight and those places where we're so curious, you know?
It's so true.
Yeah. This is a great question.
It is.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back again next time with another episode of the Creativity Cafe. So we'll speak to you then. If you like the Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.